This episode of Gators Breakdown is brought to you by MyBookie. Go bet with MyBookie. Sign up at MyBookie.ag and use promo code Gators, and they will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Bet with MyBookie.
Gators Breakdown. The Gators Fan Podcast. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC. And joining me on this Monday, kind of Tuesday episode, whichever day you listen to it, we record it live right here on Monday night. But joining me for this episode, as he does every week for this episode, is Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSCC and his site, readandreaction.com. Will, I keep saying this in regards to the Mississippi State game. It may have been a score of only 13-6, but it was a fun 13-6 victory. It felt like every play meant something.
Oh, man. You know, anytime there's a win on the road in the SEC, it's a big deal. I will say that based on my predictive powers this year, people probably should go to my bookie and bet against me. But and believe me, the Gator fans have been quick to remind me of that on Twitter. But I've appreciated the good-natured ribbing and some of the not-so-good-natured ribbing. But like I said, anytime you can go on the road, win in the SEC, it's a good win. And certainly all the emotions surrounding this one, I think, means no matter what the score, as long as you come out of Starkville with a win, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We actually didn't really talk all that much during this game, and I stood up for most of the game, even in my living room. I was hyped, ready to go, fist pumping. And it was just like I said, it was only 13-6, but it was still a fun 13-6.
Well, all I know is in the offseason, after all the crap I got for writing that Kadarius Toney could throw the ball, I feel like I have been vindicated. I mean, granted, the guy was open and all that sort of stuff, but I had people tell me he couldn't throw it downfield, that he wasn't accurate, all sorts of stuff. And what does he do? Put it right on his hands, the one chance he gets. And
we've seen that twice in his career so far, right?
He's 2 for 3, man. He's an explosive quarterback. But no, it was good to see the creativity. It was good to see. I mean, obviously, it felt like one of the teams is going to have to make a play. Mississippi State had their shot, and it bounced right off the receiver's hands. And Florida had their shot, and they ran it perfectly. I mean, you know, Franks delivered it right to Toney perfectly, and Toney delivered it right to Morrill Stevens perfectly. And, you know, when you're on the road, you're going to have to execute when you get those shots. And Florida was able to execute, and Mississippi State was not. And some of that is because of Mississippi State, but a lot of that was because of the Florida defense.
Yeah, like I said in yesterday's show, and going back and on Twitter and looking at the game and all that, you know, I just really felt, and we kind of talked about it going into this episode here, that the offense, the way the game was flowing, you know, only 3 possessions in the first half, and you know, just didn't it didn't feel like you were going to have many chances once you got in that scenario. So the creative play calling, you know, gets the only touchdown in the game, and that's still little did we know. Not much would happen after that, but it was a good call and way to get a touchdown on the board. And we'll break down a little bit here more with Will. He did his film review. His article is up on readreaction.com, and we'll talk a little bit about this LSU game coming up as well. But before we do, remember you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find Gators Breakdown episodes as well as articles from the News4Jax sports team. That's news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. Listen on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube as well if you want the video version. When using those services, please share, rate, and review the show. And on social media, Twitter and Facebook, find us at Gators Breakdown. Will, I started, you started, you know, kind of with the defense in your recap, in your review article. I kind of led with him as well in the recap show, just because, hey, look, it was you held Mississippi State to 6 points, and you know, granted, it didn't matter what happened to Kentucky and all that. Yes, is the offense for Mississippi State as good as what we thought maybe coming into the season? No. Could that be an effect of Mullen leaving? You know, maybe so. I think it has something to do with it, of course. And you made some points that it wasn't so much the adjustments made at halftime for this defense, but you know, the improvement of just the execution in the game plan.
Yeah, well, I actually listened to Mullen's post-game press conference after I'd written my article. He sort of hinted at the same thing, which was, you know, if you looked at the defensive alignment, if you looked at what the defense was doing, they didn't really change what they were doing when they came out in the half. And, I mean, in the first half, they were really having trouble stopping the run. They were having trouble. You know, Fitzgerald was really kind of having his way. I mean, they were averaging 5.1 yards overall, 7.2 through the air and 4.3 on the ground, but they averaged a yard a play on the ground in the second half and 1.9 through the air. So I mean, Fitzgerald wasn't effective through the air or on the ground, and it was because you could see that they were being more physical. They were taking on blocks and being aggressive. And to be honest, you could also see that the coaches were taking out guys who didn't do that. So there were a couple of plays where I saw, a linebacker wasn't very aggressive and he wasn't out there the next play. And they very clearly have I think they freed these guys up to make mistakes, but when they make a mistake that's effort-based, then there is enough depth to bring in backups and give them an opportunity. So, yeah, there was a screen that I diagrammed where in the first half, the linebacker and the corner were a little bit passive, and so it went for 10 yards. In the second half, the linebacker drove his man, the tight end, right back drove him into the backfield, which forced it a little bit wide. And then Chauncey Gardner-Johnson just drove his guy right into the running back and knocked him down. Same thing in the running game. The defensive line was getting, especially at defensive tackle, was getting pushed back 2 or 3 yards in the first half. Once it came, the second half, Tadarrell Slayton in particular was starting to bust into the backfield and get some penetration. And that just really screwed up everything that Mississippi State was trying to do. I mean, anytime you hold a quarterback to 3.8 yards per throw over an entire game, it's impressive, but particularly in this case, since he averaged 7.2 in the first half, to hold him to 3.8 means he basically did nothing in the second half. And, you know, my biggest concern for Florida coming in, I mean, that Terry Wilson for Kentucky really ran roughshod over him. And so I kind of assumed they were going to have some similar problems with Fitzgerald. They had a little bit of that in the first half, but there wasn't anything big that got ripped off. But he wound up with 32 yards rushing for the entire game on 20 carries. And, you know, that's Mississippi State needs him to get to 80, 90, 100 yards in order to both open up the passing game and also just really for their offense, because he's not a throwing quarterback. And Florida really took advantage of that.
And Will, I want to go back to that last drive of the game, too, for this defense. You know, being mentally tough on that last drive, they had some penalties. That really helped more Mississippi State more than anything. And it was a lot of aggressive penalties as well. You know, CeCe Jefferson with the ill-timed face mask, but he was there pressuring Fitzgerald. You know, if not for the face mask, he basically had a sack, and Mississippi State's behind the chains trying to get something going there. They eventually drive into Florida territory because of those penalties, and the defense held strong. And you know, what a heck of a play on that last defensive call, basically an all-out blitz. Donovan Steiner goes there, gets the sack. Luckily, this isn't the NFL, or he probably wouldn't be able to play football again. But luckily, you know, I mean, just good call by Grantham, and you know, I think really just taking advantage of knowing how Fitzgerald would react in that situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is definitely that kind of defense is predicated based on what you think about your corners one-on-one, and it's based on what you think about the quarterback that you're facing. And it was clear Fitzgerald was looking to the left, did not readjust because he did have a guy who looked like he was coming open down the middle. But again, does the quarterback have the ability to make those adjustments? You know, that's something that Grantham's going to be seeing on the side and really sort of betting on. I mean, if you try that against somebody like Drew Locke, you might get killed for it, but you try it against Nick Fitzgerald, you'll be okay. You know, the other thing is, you mentioned the potential tackle for the safety there, Steiner, but you know, Trey Dean went out really early in the first half.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said that, because people corrected me yesterday. I said the wrong name. I said Edwards got ejected, but I just mixed up names there.
So, you know, Trey Dean goes out. He's your backup starting cornerback, right? So he's the guy who's starting because Marco Wilson's out. So now you're down three corners, or you're down to your fourth string corner at that point. I'll tell you what, CJ McWilliams and Sean Davis looked really good in that defensive backfield. You know, again, that's one of the places where Florida's really recruited pretty strong in terms of star ratings over the last few years, and it hasn't really translated, at least last year and up until the Kentucky game this year, but those guys really stepped up. And then you got Voshon Joseph. I saw Pro Football Focus ranked him over 80 on their rating again today. He was over 80 last week. He has been just a revelation since they've moved him to playing more coverage, particularly on tight ends. Tight ends are not hurting Florida at all right now with Joseph on the field. And then Polite and Zuniga played very, very well up front, being able to get to Fitzgerald. I mean, you know, Fitzgerald is he's not a explosive running quarterback, but he's a running quarterback, and they were able to keep contain while also making him pay for being in the backfield. Some of that too needs to, there were 6 sacks, 8 tackles for loss. Some of that needs to go, some of the credit needs to go to Grantham. He had some really creative blitzes where he'd only bring 4 guys, but they'd all come from one side. And so half of Mississippi State's offensive line wouldn't be blocking anybody, and the other half would be completely overloaded, and they were able to get to Fitzgerald before he really had an opportunity to run. So, and then the other thing I should mention is that Voshon Joseph, a lot of the time, was spying Fitzgerald. And he's fast enough to do that, and was able to be disciplined enough to where, you know, Fitzgerald might get a 5 or 6 yard run, but it never turned into 20, 22, 25, 30 or anything like that. In fact, I think the longest play Florida gave up was 17 yards. And, you know, that's just a really, really impressive defensive performance.
Yeah. Well, going back and looking at, you know, kind of coming into the season, and we were looking at that pass rush, edge rush position. And you know, it was, of course, you know, being a 5-star recruit, it was CC Jefferson who was kind of pointed to as being that guy that Grantham would put in that position to go get the quarterback. And it's really, you know, a lot of people have labeled Ja'Kai Polite as maybe that breakout star that would come around this year. And pretty much he's been the breakout, and he's also been one of the best there. 4 sacks so far this year. He's been that guy that's been fitting in that Jarvis Jones type of role that you've seen Tom Grantham going back in Georgia. You know, that's his big-time star player. That when you think of Todd Grantham, Ja'Kai Polite has really kind of just fit that mold. He was wreaking havoc all in that second half against Mississippi State. As I mentioned, 4 sacks on the year. And then a couple more players who this defense has just really helped transform, I think. Vashon Joseph, as you mentioned, he started a little bit slow this year, but in these last couple of games has really come on. His speed is really, really instrumental in this defense. And also Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, go back and look at last year, and what we were talking about with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson last year is missing tackles left and right. He was playing out of position, not really a position made for him, but now this was one that can move him around. He gets into the backfield. He busts screen plays up when they come to his side. You know, those are 3 players, Polite, Gardner-Johnson, and Joseph, where this defense, this attacking style defense, is really, I think, just fit their style of play.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you talk about CC Jefferson. I think it's not a coincidence that he comes back and all of a sudden Polite and Zuniga look like different players.
Good point.
I think people have to account for CC Jefferson. And I think you can sort of say the same thing for Voshon Joseph, though. I mean, he did look really, really good against Colorado State before David Reese came back. But I do think having Reese there in the center, or having him as his running mate there at linebacker, does make a difference. They do very, very different things, right? Reese is much more of the run stopper. Joseph is much more of the guy who can sort of roam and use his speed, and not necessarily be the guy who has to be the enforcer. And I think that makes a difference to have sort of that yin and yang between the two of them. So I think a lot of the defensive success we're seeing probably has to do with those guys coming back. But certainly these guys have to be in the right spot. They have to do their job, and they have to utilize their skills. I've been really impressed with the way Grantham has deployed them. I mean, I think he's made some adjustments after the first couple of games. And then I'd have to say that, you know, I think it was an excellent job by the staff to not make adjustments going into the second half and just basically challenge the team to be tougher. And all of a sudden they were tougher up front. They were holding the front a lot better, and they were being more aggressive, and that made a huge difference in the second half. And I think on the offensive side of the ball as well, I mean, you could tell they were more aggressive in that second half. You know, we already talked about the throw by Tony, but you know, there was the deep throw that the Franks threw. Certainly there was a holding call, but they were going for it, those sorts of things. So really an increase in aggression in the second half, and that really, I think, comes from Gardner-Johnson. I think he's the guy who really sets the tone. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who, you know, when he's out there yapping and he's bringing the energy, that's the defense feeds off of that. And, you know, hey, I can't say anything more about the defense. I thought they were lights out. I thought they were spectacular. You know, certainly there will probably be better offenses than the one at Mississippi State that they play. But anytime you play on the road in the SEC and you completely shut down the opposition, you have to tip your hat to the defense. They played great.
And we will go to the other side of the ball here. And, of course, there's a couple of throws Felipe Franks would like to have back. But for the second week in a row, went into a hostile environment, played composed, hit some big throws, you know, across the middle. Converted some third downs. He played within the offensive game plan, I think, and just, you know, continues to take steps in Dan Mullen's offense. And Mullen said today in his press conference Quote, I think one of the areas he's grown the most is understanding the game plan from week to week because it changes. Even running the same play, we might run it a little bit differently from one week to the next, and I think he has grown in starting to understand that. This is how we want to run this play against this look, and this is where we're going. How they're playing us. So he's worked and understood that, what the game plan is, what we're trying to do, and what we're trying to accomplish. And, part of the game plan, Will, in this game was to get the ball out of Frank's hands, going against that Mississippi State defensive front, that defensive line. While he, went 22 or 31, I went back and charted the throws that we would, label screen passes, swing passes, throws that were near the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. 14 attempts there. So out of his, 31 attempts, 14 attempts were those made in those scenarios. And Frank's hit 12 of them. So 12 out of those 14, short throws that he hit. And that's not counting the throw to Tony that Tony threw for a touchdown. So the game plan was pretty, explanatory. Just don't let that Mississippi State defensive line go back there and feast on this offensive line of Felipe Franks. It was to get the ball out of his hands.
Yeah, I'd say there were two things for Franks that impressed me in this game. One was after the interception that he threw, he came back and kept firing. That was something that last year against Texas A&M in particular, I remember he threw an interception and then sort of got spooked a little bit and wouldn't still throw the ball in tight spaces. That wasn't something that we saw yesterday. Clearly, Mullins had an effect on him and is basically like, look, I'm not pulling you out of the game unless you do something like get a stupid unsportsmanlike conduct penalty or something like that. He completed the ball to 12 different receivers. Obviously, some of those guys, Kroll and some of the other guys that he got it to were in the same position maybe as a tight end would be. So it wasn't like he was just completely slinging it all over the field. But hey, 12 receivers are 12 receivers. I mean, that's impressive as well. And then the last thing I think that was pretty impressive was there were a few times where his offensive line put him behind the ball with penalties. In fact, the first drive of the game, I'm remembering they had a false start to open up the game, and then he was able to complete a 16 or 17 yard pass right after that to get a first down, and he was doing that on the run. There were a couple of times when he threw the ball out of bounds when he needed to, so that was good. Didn't see him running out of bounds unless he had gained a few yards. All those things that last year we would have yelled at him for, those types of things are gone. He wasn't a dynamic player against Mississippi State. He was a game manager, very clearly. That doesn't mean that he played poorly. I don't think it was his best performance of the year. I think his best performance of the year was at the game last week against Tennessee. But certainly the turnovers and all that sort of stuff, I think, sort of masked how efficient he was and how good he was in that game. I think this one he was a little bit more pedestrian, and I think the defense sort of carried the day. Anytime you only score 13 points, even with a limited number of possessions, it does mean that it's more of a game management role for the quarterback than it is a dynamic role. That's what we saw, but hey, we didn't see that at all last year. So, yeah. It's another step in the right direction. He was making decisions quickly. Like you said, the game plan was to get the ball out quick. I think there's probably still a couple of steps he needs to take to really be the guy who's going to be able to win them a game. But he's certainly getting towards that. And if he does take one or two steps forward to where he can win a game for the team, watch out, because the defense is getting good enough at this point that I think you can start to say that if the quarterback position really keeps progressing throughout the year, that they're going to be a dangerous team come November.
Yeah, Mississippi State, for whatever reason, really wasn't able to adjust and, either go man coverage, go press those receivers. I didn't see a whole lot of it. There were so many, those screen wide receiver screens open just because Florida had numbers and the DBs were playing off the receivers there. And and you're right in the way of that same game plan is not going to work every week. I'm not even sure if it worked this week because these LSU defensive backs, they can get back there. They're fast enough. They're physical enough. They'll test these Florida receivers. They'll get up in their face. And so, you won't be seeing new, screen pass after screen pass after screen pass, I don't think, versus LSU.
Yeah. I mean, it almost looked like Mississippi State was daring Florida to drive 80 yards on 18 plays.
Yeah.
And hey, if Franks can go 18 plays without screwing up, then, we're going to tip our hat and say good job. Right. I mean, they were not going to let Florida beat them deep on an explosive play. In fact, for the entire game, Florida only had three. So there was a 22-yard run for P. Ryan on sort of that weird option play. There was the 20-yard pass to Stevens from Tony, and then there was a 20-yard pass to Hammond in the fourth quarter. that sort of flipped the field and gave Florida a good field position. And they were able to sort of pin Mississippi State back there for most of the second half. You know, other than that, there really wasn't anything. So clearly Mississippi State's game plan was keep Florida in front of us. We don't think they're going to be able to drive down the length of the field the entire game. And for the most part, they were true. I mean, that was true. You know, Florida kept having penalties that would cause them to punt. You know, no three and outs. So the offense was functional. That's the thing. They scored 13 points, but the offense seemed way better than last year because it wasn't just three incompletions and a punt.
Right.
Or you know, or two incompletions and then run it on 3rd and 10. Like, there wasn't anything stupid like that. The play calling seemed to make sense.
Or the famous 3rd and 12 play action.
You know, you got to be in 3rd and 12 to have a 3rd and 12 play action. Yeah. I don't remember them being in 3rd and 12. So, again, I think it was a much more efficient performance by the Florida offense, but you can see ways other teams might exploit it. Because if you get a team that has a little bit more offensive explosion and they can do the same thing, you know, Franks is going to have to prove that you got it, or they're going to have to run them out of it. One of the two,
yeah.
Right? You're either going to have to run the ball to force them to come up, or you're going to have to throw deep and max protect, things like that. So, again, anytime you win in the SEC, it's a big deal. I still think there are some steps that Franks has to take to truly be considered more than a game manager. I think, you know, there are times where he's probably going to look fantastic and there are times that he's not. I mean, that's part of having a sophomore quarterback, right? Is you're going to get some inconsistencies. I've been impressed by the way he's played thus far, again, on the road with his composure, especially after the interception. But you know, there was the one that went right through the linebacker's hands. It could have been a pretty easy pick six too. So there are still things to improve on. And I don't think anybody expected him to be perfect at this point. I'll be interested to see how LSU decides to attack Florida, based on what they see from the Mississippi State game. And then also based on what they see from the Kentucky game.
Yeah. And all in all, Will, in the just, you know, Montez Sweat, Jeffrey Simmons, they didn't have a tackle for a loss in this game. And you know, part of that is getting the ball out of Felipe Franks' hands, but also that goes into the running game itself too. And you know, as we said, Florida doesn't really do the penalties hurt them, but as far as plays go, there's not a lot of negative plays. There's not a lot of taking tackles for losses here. You know, the running backs are getting upfield. They're getting some yardage. You know, mainly Piran and Pierce in that situation. You know, those guys seem to always be moving forward. You saw some option plays to get some of the runs outside. We hadn't seen hardly any of that this year. Franks, you know, testing the edge and some option plays, and the one Piran you mentioned, you know, almost broke that one along the sideline. That would have been the long run for a touchdown. But you know, being able just to neutralize that defensive line in a myriad of ways is something I really like with this game plan. As you mentioned, it put up a lot of points, but it also didn't put them in a whole lot of bad situations.
No, well, I mean, you know, I was just joking about not being in 3rd and 12. I really don't remember a situation where they were in 3rd and 12. Even when they were in 1st and 15, they managed to get to 2nd and 7 and then 3rd and 5. And then it was at least a manageable 3rd down situation. I also think we have to give credit to the offensive line. I mean, that's a place where people have consistently criticized Florida over the last few years, and really rightfully so. But those guys have started to coalesce. I mean, John Hevesy is known for being a good offensive line coach, and it's showing at this point. I mean, anytime you've got Simmons, they started running right at Simmons in the second half. In fact, the announcers pointed it out that they went right after him and in some capacity, maybe even surprised him a little bit by going right at him. But you know, you got to have some confidence in your offensive line to call that play. Otherwise it's 2nd and 12. And you know, there were 3 tackles for loss the entire night. You know, only 1 sack, 3 quarterback hurries. So at the end of the day, Franks wasn't harassed very much, and the running backs weren't getting hit back behind the line of scrimmage. And every time you do that, even if you're not running the ball, even if you're not running the ball perfectly, you're still 2nd and 7, 2nd and 6, 3rd and 3. And that was sort of, I think that's why it felt like the offense was so much more efficient, even though there weren't a whole lot of points being put up. That and the fact that each team traded like 8-minute drives in the first half. So.
Yeah, that was one of the fastest first halves I can ever remember.
Yeah, I mean, I looked up and it was like 2 minutes into the second quarter. I'm like, really? Yeah. It feels like there should be like 8 minutes left in the first quarter. But you know, it's just offsetting for that third quarter against Tennessee the other day. It felt like it took like 6 hours.
Yeah. Oh, well, so, you know, Gators 4-1 right now with LSU coming to town. And you know, looking at this season, as a whole right now. You know, it's not going quite as expected, but it is kind of going quite as expected. If you look at the record, 4-1, many expected the win to be against Kentucky and not against Mississippi State. You flip those. And, you know, we kind of talked about going into this season, there's ups and downs with a new coach, and we've seen the ups and we've seen the downs. And, you know, going back and looking at this win over Mississippi State, I know, and I tweeted this out, I think it's the biggest win since capturing the SEC East against LSU in 2016 with that goal line stand. That's the last time I can remember kind of feeling this way as a Gator fan watching that game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really quality win. It's one of those things that sort of, I think, especially because it's Mullen's old team, really sort of announces that Mullen is you know, who we think he is, that he's the right guy for the job. And I think that more than anything is what you come out of there feeling good about. You know, that if you go into Starkville and get beat by 20 points, then you're still sort of questioning, well, you know, was it really Mullen at Mississippi State, or you know, was it just the players that they brought in, the staff and that sort of stuff? Or is Moorhead even going to take that further? And I mean, the last 2 weeks, Moorhead's offense, I think they would have taken Dan Mullen the last couple of games.
Go read their message boards. They absolutely would have.
So as much as that guy wearing the Dan Who t-shirt who got on ESPN would like us to think otherwise, I think they'll take him back. And, you know, there's reason for that. I mean, he has done very, very well. And his on-field performance, I don't think, has ever been in doubt, at least not with us. I mean, you know, it's been one of those things where games where he's got more talent, he wins like 85% of the time. Most people win like three quarters. And then even games against more talented teams, he wins at a much higher clip than other people do too. So he's a very good coach. I'm a little bit surprised at the defensive performance right now. I mean, I just, you know, with as much as the team struggled last year, that has been, to me, the most surprising thing, is that the offense has improved significantly, but the defense has as well. I didn't really expect both of those things to happen. And since they have, Florida has been successful, and that's why they're winning the games and why they're winning on the road. Cause really, if you don't believe in the defense, then that's why you would pick against them on the road games. It's why I've picked against them in the road games. And now I just have to keep picking against them because apparently I'm jinxing. So that's a positive thing.
You know, we mentioned the word success. You know, a part of taking that step, and we sit here and say the offense is taking a step, the defense is taking a step. I won't forget special teams either. You know, McPherson, Townsend, they got it going right now too. We've seen some big plays in special teams. You know, we have seen improvement on this team, and you know, part of taking that next step of being a contender, you know, we'll get a big test this week, and to see how much of a contender Florida can be. But part of that is being able to string together victories and handling the success. The Gators they'll start to get some positive mention this week around national media and media, and they're back home. They're going to hear all the good stuff being around with a home game coming up. And this is the chance to grow in handling success and handling success with all that emotion that comes in playing a big game versus LSU. And regardless of what happens versus LSU, I still think this team is headed in the right direction overall. There'll be bumps in the road until, you know, Mullen gets his players in the program, but there are steps being taken. There's reason to point to positive progression so far and being able to see that there will also be more.
Absolutely. I mean, you're getting contributions from true freshmen, which is something that, especially in transition classes, is usually relatively rare, and significant contributions from true freshmen. So, you know, Trey Dean, Amari Burney was out there, Kroll. Pitts was out there at tight end and caught a ball as well. So they're getting some contribution.
Closer Pierce.
Pierce, there you go, man. Your boy Pierce. You're getting contributions from freshmen, which, you know, that level of contribution is a little bit unusual for, like I said, for a transition class, when you're, especially with a team like Florida that has as many players coming back this year as they did. I mean, I think it was more than anybody in the SEC East. One thing I would say is that they have been incredibly healthy. Pretty much throughout. I mean, the only injury really is the one to Marco Wilson. And while that's horrible that it's a season ending injury and all that sort of stuff, I mean, the injuries have been relatively few and far between this year.
How the heck did you know that's where I was going next?
Well, it's not gonna continue because it's the SEC and people get injured. And that's gonna be the challenge for Florida moving forward, I think, is gonna be, you know, are those injuries going to, if they start to mount up, do they have the depth? Because as of right now, you know, we already mentioned Reese coming back and CeCe Jefferson coming back. Well, you know, if one of those key guys goes down, how do they compensate? Now, at this point, the true freshmen have gotten enough time that they may be able to compensate. And, mm-hmm. and you know, the growth that those guys have shown and the development those guys have shown, you know, maybe some of the younger guys can step right in and they won't miss a beat. But I mean, that to me is probably the area where I'd be most concerned moving forward would be the depth of the team. Like you said, regardless of what happens with LSU, I mean, LSU and Georgia are really good teams they got coming up on the schedule. You know, I think they'll play them much better than I would have thought before the year. But we'll see whether, you know, irrespective of the result of those games, I think how they play against some of the other teams on the schedule is really going to dictate whether the season is considered a success.
Yeah, you know, we throw up the injuries here, and I think two things go into I think as maybe a testament to Nick Savage so far is the injuries there, and maybe you know the mindset and the buy-in of the team. You know, there's a lot of having fun on the sideline. We see them. You know, a lot of teams do this, but it's different for Florida's because it seems so stoic in years past. But you see them having fun on the sideline. You see them swaying back and forth on kickoffs, and Nick Savage is there along with them and kind of getting them hyped up there. You know, and it's kind of the little thing, I guess, that you can notice. For me, a big thing and a little thing. It's the big thing, looking at the injury so far right now, but also the little things of he's kind of there letting the kids have fun on the sideline.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's definitely a different energy with the program this year. I mean, there's no doubt. You know, we had Mullen sort of doing that little dance with Franks in the opener, and you know, that some of the guys, I mean, I think I saw that Trask was one of the guys who poured the Gatorade on him, you know, after the win at Mississippi State. And you sit there and think, okay, this is the guy who didn't win the quarterback battle, who appreciates his coach enough that he's willing to go do that with the Gatorade. So, again, I think there's an attitude and appreciation maybe for the way things are being run versus the way they were being run before, an appreciation for the hard work that they put in during the offseason, because I'm sure they're starting to see some of those results, and the buy-in to the idea that you know, really doing your job is more than just you know, going all out. It's also making sure that you're being disciplined. It's making sure that you're eating the right thing. It's making sure you're working out, all those sorts of things that are eventually going to turn the program around. So, you know, yeah, I think the injuries are a testament to Savage. I think they're also luck-based in some capacity. And, you know, you just really sort of need to, you know, you really just sort of need to figure out, you got to hope that continues, and then you're going to have some young guys step up.
Absolutely. So we got some good talk here coming up. 2018, the 2008 national championship team being recognized, and also Tim Tebow, and also a little quick preview of the Florida LSU Get Wills, kind of preliminary thoughts about that game. But before we get there, you know, sure, watching football is fun, but it's more entertaining when you have some action on the game. So guys, you've heard me talking about this for weeks, and some of you are still on the sidelines. Whether you're an expert or rookie, you should be betting at MyBookie. And if you're the kind of guy or girl out there that likes to bet and win a lot, like playing the numbers on roulette, you can create a big parlay. Pick three teams to win, and if you hit all three, you'll turn $100 into $600. And it's not just football. You can bet on all major sports. Go bet on MMA this weekend. Conor McGregor steps back into the octagon Saturday for his first fight. First UFC fight in 2 years, and you can bet on things like whether he'll win straight up or whether Khabib will deliver a first-round knockout. I recommend MyBookie because I really trust them. I use them, my friends use them, and this is one bet I know you'll be happy with all season. MyBookie has been in the business for years. They've got great online reviews, and their mobile site is easy to use. If you're on the sidelines, now is the time to get in the game. MyBookie will still match your first deposit dollar for dollar, but you got to join now because they'll be pulling that offer pretty soon. So log into MyBookie right now and double your money. Use promo code Gators and you'll get your first deposit matched 100%. That's promo code Gators, MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. And Will, it is going to be an exciting weekend in the Swamp, not only because LSU coming in to town here, but the 2008 team will be honored at the game versus LSU, as well as Tebow being inducted into the Ring of Honor. No, it was the LSU game in 2008, I think, that really sparked that season when the defending national champion Tigers rolled in to Gainesville and got blasted 51-21 a couple weeks after Florida lost to Ole Miss, after a couple weeks after we got the promised speech. There was an Arkansas game in between there, but it was that LSU game in 2008 that kind of just lit that team on. And, you know, taking a look back at it, Will, and from that point on, the Gators were more of the more dominant teams in college football history, culminating in a national championship that year.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about this during our season previews, where the LSU game is always sort of the fulcrum, right? That if Florida comes in and is able to pull off a win in the LSU game, then it typically means that they're going to be an elite squad. And if they lose to LSU, then it usually means it's going to be, you know, a good to below average season. And we've seen that the last few years. So Muschamp's 2012 team just sort of ran roughshod over LSU. I mean, I think I'm not even sure they threw the ball. They just gave it to Gillislee the entire time. And you know, we're able to win one of those games, kind of like the Mississippi State game the other day. I think it was like 16-10 or something like that. You know, the other year where Appleby hit the long pass to Tyree Cleveland, you know, that really propelled Florida into the SEC championship. And, you know, obviously that didn't turn out the way we wanted, but still, I mean, you know, it that game especially really sort of is the fulcrum where the season either rises or falls. And it's always an important game. And certainly in 2008, it was an important game. So, and one of those things where I think we knew how good Percy Harvin is. I think after that game, everybody else knew exactly how good Percy Harvin is. I mean, you know, we'd had him in 2006, but, you know, that's the play. I remember the ball that was tipped up and him taking it to the house.
Absolutely. And you go back and look, you know, we'll look at the 2008 season just for a second here before we dive into a little more LSU talk. But, you know, they lost Percy Harvin against Florida State. He hurt his ankle there in that rainy mess of a game. Still, you know, went and beat an undefeated Saban-led Alabama team without Percy Harvin, and then go on to beat Oklahoma with a, you know, probably 80% Percy Harvin, who still looked like, you know, he was still one of the best players, if not the best player on the field in that game, you know, against an Oklahoma team that supposedly couldn't be stopped. You know, that 2008 team, you know, going back and looking at it, we did our kind of we did our Florida Gator favorites, you know, in the preseason. People can go back and listen to that. You know, that team and, you know, the LSU game was brought up a whole lot, but it everything it took for that team to win. A lot of it was off the field. I mentioned the promise speech, and we go back and you see the video of Tim Tebow in the locker room at halftime of the national championship game, and Will and that team, and making sure they weren't going to lose that game. There was just a lot of things around that team, on the field, off the field, that you could see that was needed to get the job done.
Yeah, man. The promise speech is great, and certainly I think it gives everybody chills. But, I mean, the reason Florida won the national championship that year is because every player on the field, I think, wound up playing in the NFL. I mean, every guy on that field played at least – every guy who was a starter, I think, played at least a game in the NFL. And a lot of them played a lot of games in the NFL. Some of them are still in the NFL. The Pouncies are in the NFL, and you know – Hernandez at tight end, Tebow quarterback. You got Hayden, who was over there the other day. You got Janoris Jenkins. You got Major Wright. I mean, just, you know, you go down the list, and it's just like, wow, that was a murderer's row of players there who were going out to play in that team. I mean, you know, the 2006 team, I think, had some flaws, but was able to win the national championship. The 2008 team is one of those where you look at it and go, who else in college football, just pick the year, would have beaten that team at its absolute peak?
Right.
And, you know, if anything, I think Ole Miss should probably be proud of that one, being able to pull the game out, just because, I mean, after that game, they smoked everybody. And it was a fun year. And certainly, I remember where I was during the missed extra point in the Ole Miss game. I remember where I was during the LSU game, and certainly all the way through that year. So it was a fun year, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they celebrate it this weekend.
Yeah, it should be fun. And as I said, Tebow getting inducted into the Ring of Honor. SST Nation will be in Gainesville this weekend too. So be a fun time when LSU rolls in here. Will, you know, top five, top six LSU team coming into town here. Your boy Joe Burrow will be leading them in here. So, this game, it will be brought up to us a lot because of all the Joe Burrow talk, you know, good, bad, however it is, you know, there was a good 2-3 weeks there where we were wondering if Florida would be interested in Joe Burrow. He ends up at LSU, so that tiny storyline will be there for people who really are diehards and Gator football fans. It won't be too much of a national story, I don't think, but if you follow Florida Gator football, that was a big storyline over the summer Joe Burrow would go. And you go back to last year and Dan Mullen at Mississippi State, and they shredded this LSU Dave Aranda-led defense there. But this is a different LSU team, got some big wins on the schedule so far this year against Miami and against Auburn. So, you know, this Florida's going to have the work cut out for him here. You know, Burrow not the best. I mean, him and Frank's pretty similar so far this year. Frank's has got some more touchdown passes to go behind his name. But Burrow's got, I think, you know, Miami beating LSU, beating Auburn on that resume to the schedule. He had a great fourth quarter against Auburn there to get that victory. I don't think they have the running game still that they'd like to have or the running game that we know LSU to have. But that defense will be definitely the biggest test so far for Felipe Franks this year.
Yeah, you know, I think people are going to look at what I've written and say, that's why I think this is a referendum on Franks and Burrow. I don't think that's true. I think it's a referendum on Franks and Burrow because these two teams look so close from a statistical profile. So Florida's averaged 31 points per game. LSU's averaged 34.5. Florida's given up 16. LSU's given up 18.8. Even on a yards per play basis, Florida's averaged 6.1. LSU's averaged 5.6. Florida's given up 4.7. LSU's given up 4.9. So, you know, they're basically equivalent from a statistical profile when you look at them side by side. Now, obviously, you mentioned the wins. I mean, so Miami and Auburn on the road. I mean, the Miami was a neutral site game, but Auburn was on the road. You know, those are two probably, I would say Auburn's probably a top 10 team. Miami's probably a top 15 team. Unless you think Kentucky is at the level of Auburn or Miami, Florida hasn't really faced a team at that level.
I will say before you go further, I may put Kentucky up there with those teams.
Hey, that's fine. And I think that's kind of what we might end up learning this weekend is whether Kentucky really is that good, right? Yeah. I mean, Kentucky's been taking down everybody that they played. And to be honest, Florida has played them probably the best out of the last three teams they played. Yep. So, you know, maybe they're a lot better than we think and we'll see, or than we thought early in the year. And we'll see. I'm going to bet that Miami and Auburn are better, though. So if you say that, you're like, okay, Franks and Burrow have basically put up equivalent numbers against, you know, Franks has had a little bit easier schedule. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think this is where the game really comes down to. I mean, the game's going to come down to Franks versus Burrow. Yep. And if LSU's defense, you know, we already mentioned the defensive backs. You got Greedy Williams. You got Delpit back there on the back end. You've got Fulton, who's back. I mean, they got real talent on the backside of that defense. And, you know, you wonder whether they're going to be able to bait Franks into some stuff. One thing I haven't seen thus far that I saw last year a few times is that Franks would struggle when the defense changed its look after the snap. I haven't seen that a whole lot. I wonder whether LSU is going to do that, and then can Franks adjust? Because when you do change post-snap, usually it means you're a little bit out of position. And so a quarterback who can read it quickly can take advantage of it. But a quarterback who doesn't read it right usually ends up throwing a pick. So we'll see what ends up happening. I do think Aranda's going to throw a few things at him that he hasn't seen. But again, you know, we'll see. Florida's defense is playing so well. There aren't necessarily a ton of weapons on LSU's offense. That's been one of the things that, you know, Burrow's sort of been limited by his weapons. I think if he had Florida's weapons, he'd probably be played a lot better. He hasn't played as well as I thought he would, but he has made some plays that have been really instrumental to them winning. Certainly the long pass against Auburn that brought them within two, and then the field goal drive that he led, though there were a couple of pass interference calls on that one that aided it. But to me, the thing that sort of stands out is against Miami in that opening game, he made an audible that opened up a running play that went for a touchdown and sort of took LSU or gave LSU control of the game. That was a check that he made at the line of scrimmage. The coaches give him the freedom to do that. And so, you know, that's a referendum, I think, on their level of trust with Burrow, giving him the ability to do that. So, you know, I really think when you look at this, the game's going to come down to Franks versus Burrow. Whoever plays better, it's probably not rocket science to say whichever quarterback plays better, the team's going to win the game. But, you know, when you factor in the fact that Burrow's played pretty well on the road a couple of times thus far. I don't think he's necessarily going to be intimidated coming in. And so it's going to be up to Florida's defense again, I think, to step up and try to shut him down.
Yeah, they're coming off of a blowout 45-16 win over Ole Miss. It was a dangerous game, maybe, if you think, but this Ole Miss defense or offense, when they've placed or when they've played some pretty good defenses, hasn't really done much this year. Burrow did have his best game, 18 of 25, 292 yards, three scores, led team with 96 rushing yards. You know, don't get me wrong, I don't think he's some big runner here. So those 96 rushing yards versus Ole Miss don't really worry me too much. Mainly just maybe like escaping pressure and getting a couple yards here and there. But I don't think he's going to be sitting here running the ball a good bit versus Florida. But the defense, as I mentioned, it really held that Ole Miss offense down there. So, 5-0 LSU team is going to be a big-time atmosphere here. Maybe we get a 2008 replay, since that team would be here, get that scenario blowout win here. But all in all, looking at this game, Will, it may look a whole lot like the Florida Mississippi State game this past week, a pretty low scoring affair.
Maybe. I mean, we'll see. I think one of the things that last year's Florida defense struggled against the pass. This year's Florida defense is young and pretty thin on the backside. They haven't played anybody yet who's been able to take advantage of that, except for Wilson. I mean, Wilson hit a couple of deep throws over the safety. You look at Mississippi State, that's not what Fitzgerald's going to try to do. You look at Tennessee, they couldn't protect Guarantano enough to where he was able to hit a bunch of them, though he did have some guys running open on the back end. That to me is going to be the key, is can Burrow hit two or three big plays down the field against Florida's defensive backs? If he does that, then LSU's probably going to win the game. If he can't do that, if Florida can prevent that, then I think Florida has is going to win the game there. I really do think this game probably boils down to, are Florida's defensive backs going to be able to hold up against a team that wants to go downfield considerably more than the opponents that Florida's played thus far? And then the question is Burrow good enough to execute? And we'll see.
Yeah, one thing, when I meant to bring this up too, talking about the Mississippi State game, but kind of going into this game too, and going back and looking at the last two games, is six turnovers against Tennessee, you found a way to win a game that way. No turnovers against Mississippi State, you found a way to win a game that way. So at least we have seen in two different scenarios of what this team, what this defense can do in getting turnovers and using that to your advantage, but then not being able to count on getting them and still coming out with a victory.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's been interesting too, because they have improved in one facet of the game every time I've watched. So the special teams get better in the Colorado State game. I mean, the special teams were good in the opener, and then not so good against Kentucky. Right. Or, I mean, just sort of average against Kentucky, I guess. They're really good against Colorado State. That was clearly an area of emphasis. The defense, particularly in moving Joseph out to cover the tight end and really isolating him and focusing on stopping the run against Tennessee, was very, very much improved. And then in this game, and really the efficiency of Franks going downfield considerably more against Tennessee was something that improved. And then in this game, they went to that short screen game, like you mentioned, and the defense really focused on containing the quarterback, and they improved in this game at that. So the question I have is, what's that next wrinkle? Mm-hmm. What's that next area where they're going to improve over the next week? And I'm interested to see what they're going to do, because Florida's getting better each and every week. And the question is just, are they going to be able to get better quick enough when they get into the meat of their schedule? And it's here. next 3 weeks is the heart of the schedule, man. If they can come through this 2-1, it's a really impressive run. I'd be really impressed with what Mullen's put together.
Yeah, a few minutes here, Will, and I think, it just popped in my head. I guess the next step for this team, is to get a big win. Don't get me wrong. And this would be a big win, but get a big win and play well at home. We had the disappointing Kentucky loss this year, but it's been a while since at home that the Gators have had a big win. I went back and mentioned how big that LSU win was in 2016, and that's the best the Mississippi State game was the best I felt since then. Well, both of those were road games. And so maybe the next step is taking back the Swamp and getting a big victory at home when you have a ton of recruits coming in, when you have the fan base rearing and ready to go. Is getting a big win at home and letting the fans leave the Swamp, chanting, "It's great to be a Florida Gator," 90,000 strong.
Yeah, well, this sets up, I think, a lot like the 2015 Ole Miss game.
Yeah, right.
You know, that game, the roof was coming off after they just blew the doors off Ole Miss. That was a really good Ole Miss team that came in there, and Greer just lit them up. I mean, they, you know, hitting big plays all over the place, and by the time the first half was over, that game was done, and Florida absolutely dominated, and it really felt like McElwain was building something. And so if that happens, then we need to have someone make sure that Franks doesn't go to a GNC, and you know, sort of, but you know, that's kind of what it's setting up for if Florida can play well. I mean, if they can deliver a, you know, whatever, 28-10 win or something like that, where there's big plays all over the place and Franks looks like a rock star, and they can run the ball at will and LSU can't move the ball. I mean, then you, I mean, it really does change. And, you know, we talked earlier about how LSU's the fulcrum point for the season. I mean, you know, if they blow the doors off LSU, that really does change what you think about the team going forward. I mean, it's a nice win on the road at Mississippi State. It's a nice win on the road against Tennessee. It's a statement win to blow, you know, to blow out LSU at home, really just to beat LSU at home. But it's a statement win to take a top five team and beat them. And puts you to a point where you go, okay, well, now this is a team that can threaten Georgia. Yeah. And now this is a team that should handle Florida State pretty easily. And you start looking at that and going, okay, well, you know, what does that really mean in terms of the quality of the team going forward? So we're going to learn a lot about Florida's team in this game. I think we're going to learn a lot about where they need to improve, and we'll probably learn a lot about where they have already improved. And that's one of the nice parts about going against a team that's really, really good, is that you learn a lot about yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. There, Will, what you got coming up? ReadingReaction.com this week. I'm sure LSU preview coming up later this week.
Yeah, so I've got a new writer who's going to have something coming out tomorrow, and so we'll tease that on Twitter, and you can check out her stuff when it comes out. I'm really excited to see what she comes up with, and then I've got an LSU preview and probably a little bit of a Burrow versus Franks breakdown too, because some people have been asking for that. So so we'll put it out there at least, and sort of, hey, how have they done thus far? And what does that mean for the game?
Cool deal. Will, anything else, man?
Nah, man. Just thanks to everybody for giving me crap about picking Mississippi State. And I've had my brother-in-law and my brother both text me right after the game, telling me that I have to continue to pick against Florida so that they keep winning. So you know, we'll see. I'm always going to go where the stats take me. But you know, sometimes they're wrong, and no one's more happy that I'm wrong on the last two than I am. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, these last 2 weeks have been fun there. So, you know, for people, just remember, let's have fun out there. That's really all it's about. And a lot more fun when the Gators are winning, Will.
Oh, it's all a good time. Nobody's been too mean to me yet. So it's all good fun. And to be honest, it's way more fun to write the recaps, even if I'm wrong, after Florida's been successful and Florida's moving in the right direction. You know, that's the thing, is you look at this stuff and say, I mean, one of the things I think we need to recognize is how good of a job Mullen's doing. Yeah. Because when you look at the statistical profiles, you go, huh, well, Mississippi State should probably win this game. And, you know, it didn't happen, which is all the credit to Mullen and the players for being able to go into a hostile environment and pull out that win. And, you know, hopefully they can do it again this weekend.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it should be a fun time in the Swamp coming up against LSU. So that's Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSCC. And once again, his site, readandreaction.com. I'm your host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.